Gamer Central are in the house, taking over once again. Your boy Ed and the crew are here. We got E3 2019. Press conferences are all in the books, but there's a it's a very decisive E3 because it felt like there was stuff that was happening, but then it felt like 50% of the time, nothing was really happening this year.
There were clear winners and losers. We were really good, or you was like, nah,
yeah, this year, yeah, this year.
It's like you were good, or I didn't watch your stream.
Yeah. Yeah, because last year, Microsoft was the clear winner, just going on game-centric, where Sony kind of wasn't really doing anything, and Nintendo was Nintendo. But this year, with Sony out of the way, there was so much stuff going on. But, of course, before we get into that, I'm going to introduce the crew. Of course, your boy Ed. AJ's here in the house.
Yo, what it do?
Seth's here in the house.
Yo, what up?
Pete's here in the house.
What's going on?
And, of course, Marcus the
Fridge. The Fridge, baby!
And lastly, Party Nerds are, of course, sponsored by Eight & Sam Beer Company out in Woodbury, New Jersey. We have a little different beer today, but it's really good stuff.
They sold out of our beer, delicious. The Captain Caboose.
Yeah, Captain Caboose. It's hard to find the Party Nerds beer, but check your local beer shops, check your local bars.
Or just go to the brewery. It's a really cool place.
Or go to Eight & Sam. It's a really good spot.
And it's affordable.
Yeah,
it's hard to find because it's so delicious.
Damn, yes. Tasty.
We're getting. We have people. We went to a GameStop the other day, and somebody asked us about the beer because
I was wearing the shirt. Like, oh, the partners. Yeah, they just came out with that beer, right? I was like, oh, yeah.
So like, well, people yes, are actually
we
about
did.
It.
Yes, you're like Bethesda. You're like a shill.
Yeah.
Ken got his first shill.
Are you really shilling if it's like kind of your own product?
Actually, yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of how it works.
Isn't that just called promoting?
A little bit of both. It's a little bit of both. But so before we get into the big five press conferences, because there were really only five things to talk about, we want to kind of get into some of the things that happened pre-E3, because E3 started mad early this year outside of a lot of different announcements. Like, of course, Destiny 2 had an expansion. Call of Duty Modern Warfare is dropping.
Pokemon
Direct.
The Pokemon Direct happened. Death Stranding's release date was announced as well. But, of course, we're going to do a couple of minutes on Google Stadia because they had their big reveal, their price point, how the service is going to be working.
Mm-hmm.
We asked this question 2 weeks ago. Is streaming only console going to succeed? But now that we know what Stadia is, do we feel any better, worse, or about the same?
Well, see, the reason... Okay, so y'all remember, I was all... Stadia's done. Like, there's no reason for it to exist. But and we're going to get into it later with talking about Bethesda, but Orion?
Yeah.
That shit that they're working on?
Yeah.
That's going to save this.
I don't think they're related at all.
They literally mentioned
that it's related because it's for streaming. It's for streaming video games.
It's streaming tech.
It's streaming tech. Yeah, it's not just for Bethesda. It's for everyone. Mm-hmm. It's the principle of being able to make these files smaller and transfer them easier, which eliminates the problem because Ken was or well, AJ
they're
was
not
showing
transferring
us.
Files. It's an input delay. What they're trying to do is give... So the way current streaming games works is you stream a video stream back to a device. So that's why they say it works on anything with Chromecast, right? So you're Chromecasting a game off a server somewhere else. You're broadcasting a video stream to your display, and then you're controlling it with a game controller. So the idea behind their Orion project is to take the game control, and instead of passing it over the video stream, they're saying the controller has a direct connection to the server. And then the video, that way you're controlling the machine directly at the point of like where the video is created.
You're crossing stuff, Seth, because the controller was already, that's how the Stadia controller works.
That's the point of Orion. That's what it does.
No, the point, no.
That's what the Stadia does.
Yeah, the point of Orion is.
The point of Orion is to make the files easier to transfer.
There's no file that's being transferred. There's just a video stream.
No, but it's
compressed
video. It's the compressing of that stream is what they mean.
Yeah, it's so that, like, there was that big article that was going around that streaming on Stadia for an hour would take like a terabyte of data.
Which is crazy.
And I remember reading
with Orion, it's crunching that. To like, I forget what the number was, but it's like a fraction of a fraction of what
that was. A fraction of a fraction. And that's what saves Stadia at the end of the day because you can't, like, there's people with data caps. Like,
but here's the thing with that, though, right? Because there was that, and then there was also the announcement of Ubisoft's streaming thing that also works with Stadia. And it seems like Stadia is going to become kind of like almost like a aggregate for a lot of these different services.
A streaming Steam?
I guess so. But I think the problem with that is, it sounds good when you're like, oh, Orion will make it faster. Okay, how much does Orion cost?
Yeah.
So does Stadia now $13 a month, $15 a month, and then if I want to get Ubisoft, it's so Orion's $9.99.
No, they said that Stadia
is $9.99.
But my question is, how much is Orion?
So wait, here's the thing: is Orion
something? Orion costs extra.
Is this something that that's
not clear?
The consumers are going to pay for with Orion?
No,
it doesn't seem like it.
It's like that's what it seems. They said Orion is something they can build into a game to make it better.
Right. That's the gist of it.
Not like an extra feature. It's like DirectX. It's just in there.
So as far as I understand, Orion is a specific thing where like the developers are the ones who are using this specific software, and it's supposed to take some cost off the publisher, which then can help the consumer as well. Hmm. The consumer doesn't necessarily see anything tangible outside of their gameplay experience possibly being altered, but it's not something that the consumer has to buy into. The publisher would have to buy into. So that's kind of how I see where Stadia is going to use Orion to kind of build a partnership with Bethesda to make their service a lot better. And then all these other services like PlayStation Now, Uplay, things like that.
xCloud,
everything. They can also see some input in this depending on how successful it is, which I know it's in its earlier stages. So Stadia is going to have a rough thing going
forward. Well, it was running really good on that Samsung phone or whatever phone they were using. Doom was running real good on that.
For the record,
all stage demos are fake. Continue.
So there's also one thing we're forgetting to mention at all. So you said price. Well, Stadia is actually free. Stadia Pro is $10. That gets you 4K 60 FPS. But you can play at 1080p for free. You just buy the game. And that's actually kind of cool because a lot of these services, unless like you're running Steam and like an in-home streaming box, you're doing it yourself, there's already a couple services that do this. There's Shadow. I think Gamefly had a similar service.
Gamefly did something like that.
There were a couple that have cropped up over the years, but none of them have been free. So Google's saying like, oh, we have all this horsepower. They have so much money. They can literally do this for you for the cost of the game. So maybe the game costs $60, but then I can play it on my phone with a controller attached to it. That sounds kind of cool. You know, if I go to my boy AJ's house and I just bring my phone and a controller and I'm playing Doom, I don't have to drag my PC or my console with me.
Yeah.
That it might actually be kind of worth it when you think about it.
Yeah, it's an attractive offer.
And piggybacking off after that, that's why console gaming is so popular. The barrier of entry is so low compared to building a PC and like doing Steam and things like that. Us as gamers, we don't see that as anything big. But then with streaming platforms such as Stadia, all you need is like a Chromecast-enabled device or like a laptop, even a cheap one, and like a game controller that has Bluetooth, and you can technically play like 1080p, AAA games.
And it's almost harder to find a non-Chromecast-enabled device these days. Like almost everything has it.
Unless you're buying specifically, a Roku TV or a Fire Stick or Amazon.
And Roku TVs are Chromecast enabled.
No. Specifically, they need Google Chromecast, not like the Firefox like fake Chromecast.
Right, exactly.
But is Roku not? Whatever.
I don't know.
So, this is something we're going to touch back on when it comes to September, because I believe that's when it's releasing. Now, you're going to be one of the early adopters, so I'm going to be curious to see what this is going to look like once we turn it on.
Yeah, can't drop that.
That's
going to
be
an
instant live stream.
It even had built-in recording, so maybe we can a little recording.
There is that button where you can, if you get the controller, you can just push it and automatically go only to YouTube, though, not on Twitch.
Yeah.
But we can do a YouTube video and show people day one Stadia and be like, well, this is either great or awful.
I'm going to tell you straight up, day one is going to be fucking awful.
Everyone knows that. Yeah. I think it's probably going to be rocky until 2020 when they do that full launch for everybody.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing is, it launches later this year, but only for premium users, right?
Exactly.
The freed version is until 2020.
But I get that super cool, like, you know, was it like
the blue controller?
Yeah.
It's sick.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie to you.
You know, I thought that the biggest barrier here would be internet speed, but as someone who works for Comcast, I can tell you more and more people every day are getting higher and higher speeds to your internet. Like people,
when they tell me what they use it for, then they're like,
I have 400 megabits.
Yeah.
And they're like watching YouTube.
Bro, wait, let me.
Well, fair to say.
Yeah, not like anywhere else in the country.
AJ did a test when, what was it? How many people? So it was me streaming, the streaming in the living room, and someone on their phone. And
everyone's on their phone at this day.
And they couldn't, and he couldn't use Stadia.
I'm going to put that more towards the placement of your modem than the actual
even so, like those speeds are anecdotal based on like you living where you live because
that can also play.
You know, my website Lupots is like international, and I talk to a lot of Canadians and Europeans, and their internet is not the same as ours. Canadians are capped. Like those are huge markets that are not going to be able to use Stadia the way that it's intended,
and like
it can't survive on American and on the niche amount of American users that have enough internet and are interested and want to plunk down the money. That's a small pool of people.
Small pool of people, and that's why Orion's important.
But over time, it will get bigger and bigger and bigger. And once 5G finally becomes a widespread thing,
that's going to make a big difference.
So, right. Like, that's what I mean. Day one, year two, year three, even.
No.
It's going to get bigger and bigger, and it's going to explode.
See. The real question is more is like Google.
A console that you don't have to buy.
Yeah.
And that's cool.
The real question is Google willing to invest in it in the long term? Are they willing to take it on the chin for 3 or 4 years even until internet gets widespread enough where everyone's using it?
I think they already have all the backbone they need to do this. So this is just like the icing on the cake for them. They're like, we want to get into games. We already have everything we need to do that. Let's do it. And they're doing it because they're Google and they have fuck you money. Like, that's the best way to put it. They just have that money. So, you know, why not?
They're only going to take it on the chin for so long, though.
That's true. So
they're our business.
Going off from that, so we're going to go through each convention based off of worst to best. And that's kind of based off of the big five. So we're not going to spend too much time on certain things that didn't really have a lot announced, but we'll touch on it. The worst one, I think, was Ubisoft.
Yeah, I was going to say E3, but...
it was all of E3.
It was all the entirety of it.
All of E3. EA didn't have a show outside of like...
EA didn't have a show besides Fallen Order.
Which looks
great.
They had Watch Dogs. I think it looked okay.
That's not EA.
Ubisoft.
No, Ubisoft. Yeah,
that's Ubisoft. Weren't we talking about Ubisoft?
Yeah, we are.
Now we're talking about Ubisoft.
Well, we were basically dismissing EA first, and then we're going to talk about Ubisoft.
So fast,
sweet. So, yeah.
But again, Jedi Fallen Order looks very good. I just want to throw that out there.
Watch Dogs Legion. That's the big announcement out of this whole convention. So it's the third game, Watch Dogs 3. It takes place in London. There's a lot. One of the big selling points about this game is that you can pick up consistent party members throughout the game, and all of them have permadeath. So you see that a lot in like real-time strategy games like XCOM, where you know you can recruit a lot of different NPCs. But if some of them die, then you lose those stat bonuses and everything else forever, and you have to start from scratch.
Another example, Fire Emblem, a much better series. Continue.
Okay.
XCOM's really good.
I think this is more akin to Fire Emblem, though, because in XCOM, the characters are not characters. They're, like, units.
That's true.
And they don't really have personalities, where, like, in Fire Emblem, like, it's a character with a name and a background, and if they die, they're dead, and that impacts the story. And that seems like more what we're looking at here.
True. So it can't impact the story that much, because, like, realistically, how many branching paths can you make for the gamer?
So that's the thing, is I don't necessarily agree with you, because, like, looking at this, like, at this stage in this generation, like, and the tech we have now, there are examples of games with insanely deep webs like that. Like Detroit, like from last year.
Yeah.
Which like has a lot of permeations.
But did you see how many characters they have?
They said every NPC.
So Ubisoft is famous for doing
But how many NPCs thing? Are there?
A lot.
There could be a lot. Did you we don't know
the,
yet.
Did you see the
you could, they said any NPC. So if you're in a city and you see 200 characters, you can get
all
any 200 of them. I'm assuming it's random. I'm assuming all the stories are random.
But think about 100%. It this way. How many people do you need to have in a map to populate an area and make it feel full when there are both civilians that you can recruit and the enemies that are there at any given moment if you do something? There's all the people on the cops and stuff that are not going to be able to be. So I think to me, like you look at so many open world games now where like you don't need that many NPCs to make a space feel alive. And like I think of something like Don't Nod's Vampire, where it was the same thing. Every NPC in the world had a backstory. If you killed them, there were reactions to that. I don't know how deep it's going to be. Like your concerns are not unreasonable, but with where we are and you know the tech that we have, it's not unheard of to think that they could program that many characters with unique activities. We've been doing that since Majora's Mask.
Yeah, but this is like a Grand Theft Auto style game. There's going to be a shit ton of NPCs. It's not like Skyrim where you know there's a set amount of NPCs in one area. This is a whole city. Like it's like if they took Grand Theft Auto and every pedestrian you see walking down the street has a character, and Ubisoft is famous for showing something off
buggy games
and then having it not be the same when it comes out. Like the original Watch Dogs, it looked way better in the E3 trailer than released and was kind of bad. Not to say that Watch Dogs 2 was bad because I hear that one was. I didn't play it, but I hear it was really good.
I heard it was better.
So we'll see if you know 3 delivers. But Ubisoft tends to be like, oh, we're going to make this really cool thing, and then only kind of halfway delivers on it. Games are usually entertaining. Like, I really like Far Cry.
Dude, that's just,
I love Far Cry.
They do great on Far Cry. Just Ubisoft in general, Division.
And they have one more game.
Far Cry.
I don't know, man.
Ghost Recon they announced, and that looked okay.
No, it doesn't. Okay, so look.
But, like, you can talk about these games all you want, but they have huge, huge groups of people that play them every single day and make a ton of money. So, like, people like to shit on Ubisoft, but Ubisoft makes good games.
Rainbow Six Siege is the biggest example.
A lot of them have had rough launches, especially their multiplayer games, but every single one of them, like, from the last, what, 4 years that they've released, even with a bad launch, has come out, found an audience, and found success.
I feel like they make good games, they make playable games, and people who like those games play them.
No, they worked on Siege. Siege was
I don't think that's
fair,
man.
And they really worked at it to make it
better. But that's the way I'm seeing it, because those, like, realistically, these games are not that great. They're not.
So that's your opinion.
At the end of the day.
But that's not just my opinion. It's a lot of people's opinion.
I disagree.
We'll get into that on the next company, I'm sure. But go ahead, AJ.
At the end of the day, they did not announce a new Prince of Persia. They did not announce a new Splinter Cell. No, I don't care. Next topic.
That mobile game, I mean, that was...
We don't talk about it. Wait. Go back on the games you were listing. Splinter Cell and Prince of Persia. I forgot they did that game. For the longest time.
Yeah,
Prince of Persia, every
game.
Time is fantastic. All of those games are great. I think that's the only game series that I truly like from them start to finish.
I think if we wanted to spend more time on Ubisoft, I would argue for their merits, because I think Ubisoft is a company that people like to throw a lot of flack at, and they make quality software.
They don't make games for us that we're into. That's,
and
it.
That's
not our
that's totally
that's
fine.
Not true.
That's,
fine. That's not true, because I love The Division. Just stop playing because it was shit.
Yeah, but people love The Division too, man. And a lot of people love Division. And not to, like, throw shade at you, man. You also said Destiny 2 was shit a week ago, and now you're so excited to play it. So what the fuck are you even talking about?
Because that's because they came out with that new DLC and it's going free to play, and there's a whole lot of changes coming to that game.
They're making a lot of changes.
And they did that with The Division after you stopped playing, according to anyone who still played the game up until Division 2.
He's right. If you're going to give them shit for that, you can't give Destiny shit because you can't give Ubisoft shit because, like I was trying to say earlier, they totally renovated what the hell's
live services?
No,
For
Rainbow
Honor,
Six Siege.
Oh, Six
they
Siege.
They totally
too.
Went Siege. Over Siege and fixed everything because it came
so
out to some critical
right
like people were saying it had problems. Then they fixed everything, and right now it's one of the most live shooters. Like, and Ubisoft makes it, and the worst part is it's on their launcher.
So
nobody likes their launcher.
So with that said, there seems to be a pattern of, like, people releasing, like, building a lot of hype, releasing unfinished like, half-cooked, like, products, improving it, and then the general public, like, you know, kind of accepts it after a while, and then grows to even love it, like, you know, Destiny 2 or The Division.
Well, we still got to see what Destiny 2 is going to do. It could still be bad.
Potentially. But, like, you know,
it could.
Possibly Destiny 2. The question is, do you think that's going to be the case with Fallout 76 and its Battle Royale mode?
Oh, yeah.
I think they burned people too much.
Next topic.
Here's the thing. I don't think that burned people too much exists.
Nah.
Like, I think that, like, gamers are, and, like, all of us included, are so quick to be, fuck this, you know, F that, like, whatever. I'm never going to buy this. I hate them. And it's all bullshit, because if the game turns it around and it's good and you already own it, you're going to play it. No Man's Sky proved that.
No Man's Sky did prove that.
Came out and everybody was like, it's the biggest failure joke in gaming history. And then they re-released it last year and it was a best-selling game.
But it took them how many years?
It doesn't matter how long it took them.
Because they still made money.
Do you think it would have done better if they delivered on all those promises?
That's not relevant to the point I'm making.
No, it's not.
My point is that at the end of the day, if the game is good, people will play it.
Yeah.
So if a game comes out and it flops, like, all they need to do is turn it around. In Fallout 76, regardless of how bad the launch was, at E3, Bethesda said all the right things. They came out, they owned the fact that it sucked, they made jokes about it.
That's
Pete
funny.
Pete Hines, in every interview where people were, like, playing with kid gloves with him, where they're like, oh, it had kind of a rough start. He's like, let's call a spade, it was bad.
Yeah.
Like, he said those things. That's what Bethesda does. They've come out, they have this new plan where they're like, NPCs, everybody goes crazy.
That's good.
New DLC, which everybody's going to get into, and now if you didn't try it, it's free for a week, and it's probably going to be on sale. Great. That's how you get all the people that thought it sucked in to try it.
Yep.
Like, this is, they're setting it up for a relaunch. And I don't, that doesn't mean it will work, but it absolutely could.
I just think it's sad when they got a hype like, it has NPCs.
Yeah, but see, that's an important
but that's
part
huge.
Of Fallout, though. That's a very
I know,
important
but like,
part of
why
Fallout.
Was it missing in the first place?
Because they didn't want them in there.
Well, that was a decision that they made.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, it was a decision they made. They said creatively they wanted, it was like, hey, you coming
be,
out.
They
and,
wanted it to be a multiplayer
and,
game.
And multiplayer game, and it's just you and your friends, and there's no one else. But then later, I don't know if it's
they
bullshit.
Had NPCs, they were synced. Now there's human NPCs.
But wait. Ed, what do you think about this? Like, because you played Fallout 76.
I have not played Fallout 76. No. I've been reading up on the backlash. And here's my thing about Fallout 76. Yes, we are kind of in an age where we kind of accept broken games. Also because we accept games as a live service. That's kind of like two of the biggest trends. When you have games as live services, you can almost try to see how far of a border you can push to send out an unfinished game because we accept it now. And I think Fallout 76 last year was the breaking point for that just because it took a traditionally single-player game that everybody loved, glitches and all, fine, and you tried to make it a open-source kind of game, like, you know, everything's about multiplayer. Everything's about interacting with your friends.
Always online.
About interacting, always online, having 64-player servers. And it didn't. Not a lot of those promises came to fruition. So I think Fallout 76 was the first game where we were like, nah, dog, like, what are you doing? Fix this bullshit now. And I think this past E3, they're like, yep, this is the game where we couldn't get away with that, and now they're fixing it.
I think they did better with ESO. Because people actually really like ESO, but then in Fallout 76,
but it's the same narrative.
It's the same narrative. It's the same narrative. It sucked at launch.
Same narrative, different genre, though.
Yeah, that one's more of a regular MMO.
We accept MMOs as a rebuild, as kind of like one of those rebuilding processes.
Like a games
we don't accept that with any other genre.
But I feel like we do with games as service, and that's what we're seeing here, is that, like, I think to me it's like, this is all part of a longer trend that's been going on for years now where, like, early access began, where gamers are used to paying for games that are unfinished, so we're more willing to buy a game, have it be a mixed bag, get fixed, and then come back to it.
But we could put that on, like, investors, because what they want to do is they want to hype a game up. They want to show, like, look at Anthem. Like, Anthem looked really, really cool. Then the game came out, and it wasn't totally bad, and then it just didn't get the content it needed because they rushed it out the door. And why do they rush these games out the door? Because they have to pay investors.
That's also a bigger story than, like, go read the Jason Schreier article. It wasn't rushed out the door. They developed it for 6 years. Like,
they made a lot of changes last minute, didn't they?
Yeah, but
still, 6 years.
You can't.
Jason Schreier, that makes a good point. There's a lot of journalists who are going up on it. Jason Schreier, I follow Jim Sterling on YouTube, and he goes into a lot about how, like, these services work in terms of, like, having to fill in for CEOs and investors who are like, hey, listen, this is the bottom line, regardless of what the consumer thinks. So both of the interests don't really match that well.
Nope.
And we're not at a point yet where we're going to see, like a collision of that yet.
So what if Anthem needed 2 more years, right? So what if they were like, okay, give it 2 more years, let us really finish this, let us make it a really good product, even if it did take 6, that's a long time.
Sure.
So you're right about that, it's a long time. But what if 2 more years... the game came out and it was really good at launch.
But you don't know it would be good, and that's the problem. You're dealing in hypotheticals. And if you do any reading about these, here's the thing, right? I'm not a EA fanboy.
Yeah.
But the reality is that gamers like to point fingers and look at easy narratives and say, that's what happened. EA owns BioWare and they ruined Anthem. Go read Jason's article about it. BioWare is a studio that is struggling right now in terms of, like, leadership not agreeing, important people leaving because of the studio being mismanaged, and there are a lot of problems that have nothing to do with EA being the one at the helm.
I could see that in Mass Effect.
Well, and,
I was going to say.
At some point, right, like, you have to, like, let EA be a company, and that, like, they can't sign blank checks for 6 years when they go and look at the finished product that they are supposed to have in 4 years, and it's 6 years and they've given them 2 extensions and it still looks bad and isn't together and doesn't have an identity. You think they want to give them 2 more years and another $200 million to see if they figure it out?
No. Well, no, then hire new people. Like, unfortunately,
it's not that easy.
Yeah, you can't.
That's
a game. That's a game.
That's a game they already invested 6 years and $600 million into with one of their 3 biggest studios working on for 6 years, and they didn't put out another game. The one other game they put out from their B team was a flop. Like, they needed to put the game out. And it's just like, I'm not saying that that was the right thing to do, but at some point, we have to realize that big AAA companies are businesses that do have shareholders and CEOs, and they have to be beholden to those things. And that's not, doesn't make it right or wrong. It's just the reality of business. You can't have 8 to 10 years with a AAA team of hundreds of people working with no product.
Right.
You can't do it.
And it's also fair to say these games don't just come out of nowhere. Like, somebody has to fund them.
Right.
So
exactly.
And that's the thing, is if you want games like this, you need companies like EA. And it's just like,
it's true.
And granted, not all of them need to be deal with things the way that EA does. I think that every other studio we're going to talk about today handles business better than them. But at the end of the day, like, That's how you get these games, is a company like that making an investment 6 years before they even have a proof of concept.
Yeah.
You know? It's a gamble.
So moving on from the live service thing. So Fallout 76, yes, we know they're going to be fixed and everything else. Outside of a lot of other things that happened at Bethesda's press conference, I think the one thing that broke the internet were the... Now, yes, they announced two major IPs. They announced...
We're talking about the good one, right?
Yeah.
Come on.
Good one.
We're talking about Ghostwire Tokyo and also... Arkane Studios' Deathloop.
That's the one. Deathloop.
Wait, what about Wait, Doom?
No, no, no.
Doom Eternal looks great.
Doom
no,
Eternal. That's
but two new IPs.
You know what? They didn't talk about Starfield.
They said they weren't going to.
I was just surprised.
Let's talk about what they did talk about.
So Deathloop and
Ghostwire
Tokyo. Thank you. I had it.
How you going to forget my wife's game?
Oh, my God.
It's been one day. Calm down.
I don't care.
So that's been the whole thing. So the two new IPs coming out of Bethesda. We know they announced one last year as well. So it looks like Bethesda is on this train of just like releasing newer IPs and giving concept to people like Shinji Mikami, his studio.
And they're all single player games.
And they are single player games as well. Deathloop may not be. I'm curious to see what that's going to be like. I don't know if that's single player or not.
So my thing
really
is,
see any gameplay.
So I
we
think
didn't. We didn't.
You didn't need to see gameplay, at least in my mind, right? Like, I'm a huge fan of Arkane. I've been following them since Dishonored.
Yeah.
And I think looking at this game and knowing how Dishonored 2 specifically played, I think it's pretty clear to me it's going to be a game in their classic first person, like, tackle the level however you want with this very deep sim kind of vibe, and you'll play as one character or the other character, and you'll get two sides of the same story. That's exactly how they did it in Dishonored 2, and it's like showing off these two main characters, spy versus spy thing, that just seems like it makes
sense. So what you're telling me is that this game is a mixture between Dishonored and Kingdom Hearts Stream Drop Distance.
We don't know that.
In the best
other
way.
Other games they've done are like that.
But also
they're
like
good games. So.
But also like 1970s. Like it's like it was like dude,
So this game looks amazing. I want to talk about Ghostwire Tokyo more, but this game looks amazing, and it was made by that. What's the studio called again?
Arkane.
Arkane.
Dishonored and Prey.
I never played Dishonored. I heard about Dishonored 2. I heard it's the shit.
They're so good.
So. I hear a game is the shit, and I even if I haven't played it, I take people at their words most of the time. If they really played it and really enjoy the game, and it's not, you know, they got into it. If you can get into it, that means it's a good game.
It's pretty good.
Dishonored was my game of the year.
Really,
the game that came
really,
out.
Really get into it. You know what I mean? This game looks like it's going. It looks like what you said. It looks like it's going to be Dishonored 2. And if it's that, and I get to play that game without having to play Dishonored 2 in the same kind of like vibe and the same kind of gameplay, I'm down.
New universe,
different universe, and like new universe, new characters. I'm down with that shit.
I'm into it. I'm so into it.
Honestly, you should give Dishonored a try. It's actually pretty good.
It's
actually
really unique. Good series.
Yeah, they did
Dishonored
the. Really
there's good. Not many games like it.
They did the remaster too, so it has like all of the DLC that you can pick up. Dishonored 2 is usually cheap, and then there's the spinoff where you play as
You play as a different character.
I can't remember the actress's name though.
Yeah, it's called The Outsider, I think, something like that.
Yeah,
I think that's what it is.
Death of the Outsider.
Yes. So there's a lot of good things about.
Great trilogy.
So on top of that, 2 minutes left before we go to the next specific press conference. Ghostwire Tokyo, not only the fact that it looks like an amazing game, we also broke the internet because of the studio itself. AJ, it warmed your heart. We were sitting together.
Second that angel came up on that screen, the first thing out of my mouth was, oh my God, she's precious.
Yeah.
We need to, like,
save her.
Not only is she precious, she worked on Bayonetta and Okami.
Yeah, she has.
Not to mention Evil Within.
And I love Bayonetta. Evil Within, whatever. Bayonetta.
So
Bayonetta.
I'm talking about the creative direction of those games. She's the
creative director.
She's the creative director of this game. She was the art director for those three games.
And I love those games. The art in those games is particularly good.
She's the creative director on this one.
Right.
I can't wait to see what comes out of this crazy woman's
mind. And also,
mind.
Especially...
I can't wait to see it, dude. She studied under the man who made Resident Evil.
Right.
He's her senpai.
That was such a cool thing, too, where he was like, oh, like, here's my protege.
Yeah,
and like
here's
her,
my protege
yeah.
and her
yeah.
fucking
her
game.
First
she
game.
Can be like, the lead
what?
Of the studio.
Yeah.
Eventually. So cool. Like, Shinji Mikami is like... Her name is Akumi Nakamura. She's a creative director at Tango Gameworks. So
she's adorable.
She could be the one that could, like, succeed Mikami at Tango itself, depending on how, especially with how this project is going
along. Or maybe
even
like,
the game looks beautiful.
Or maybe even like they might give her her own studio. Like if this goes well, like you know.
I tweeted out a picture of a still from this game, and someone asked me it was an actual picture from Tokyo, like I was there or some shit.
Yeah, no, it's gonna be
that game looks
sick.
Beautiful.
Yeah,
no.
I mean she's got chops.
The art direction on it, those three samurai with the fucking circles on their face and the light up lines.
Oh my God,
that shit was so cool. It reminded me of the Hyper Light Drifter. That's what it reminded me
of. I could see that, yeah.
And it's just such a cool concept, and I haven't seen any gameplay of it at all. I don't know anything about the game other than it looks fucking lit.
The thing is, though, like, when the whole pitch of the game was, here's the creative director who's known for being a great artist and the art looks good, it's like, all right, like, you'll figure the gameplay out. I'm sold on the aesthetic right now.
It's spooky. Yeah.
It's going to be very, very aesthetic-pleasing.
One more before we move on to the next topic. Doom Eternal. Looked
so good.
That game's gonna be mad hype.
I'm 2016.
I couldn't.
This looks so good.
Well, this looks better. Like I couldn't believe like how fast and fluid Doom 2016 was.
It's very platformy-ish too.
Yeah,
you saw him navigate like
he's like leaping and.
I think this is gonna be much more fluid than that. And of course, they showed off some of the multiplayer with the battle mode.
It looks beautiful.
And like the way they showed all the hot maps and everything, where it was like he was switching between like three or four weapons like within seconds. I was like, oh my God, this looks.
Assuming
like,
that's on controller, that could be on PC.
Yeah,
well,
they were playing Doom 2016 on the demo with the controller. That was cool, but Doom Eternal, just like all the things they're doing with it, I love the idea of the multiplayer mode. I'm hoping they learned from Doom 2016. Doom 2016, they initially released it and then sold DLC. And then later did update 666 where they were like, okay, all the DLC's free now because nobody was buying it.
Nobody was playing the multiplayer.
The multiplayer wasn't very successful.
Well, then the multiplayer came back after that for a while. Yeah. I'm hoping that, because they kind of killed it by accident doing that, I'm hoping this time they're like, oh, all the DLC's just free. You know, just buy it, play it. And that's what I want to see out of Doom. I'd really love to see Doom's multiplayer thrive. It was so fun.
And if you pre-order Doom, you get Doop Guy, which is the greatest
thing. I want the helmet.
Thing.
I'm going to buy the special
edition.
Yeah,
I kind of want the collector's edition because that helmet's fucking sick.
Yeah,
fast forward to
Doom
a year
guy.
From now and we have like, we're doing a podcast. Seth can't get the helmet off.
My head's too damn big.
moving to third place, Microsoft.
Yeah, baby.
So, I know they have like, the new console coming out. You have Gears. You have Halo Infinite. They showed off a little more of that. I just feel like they're a strong gaming platform, but they're not a strong like studio or developer.
They're getting there though.
That is true.
When they're getting there, they're buying there.
Well, but that's how you do it.
Yo, man,
17 studios.
I don't care about sports, but I think the most apt analogy I can make is like tell that to the Yankees. You don't need to homegrown talent. If you buy it and it's good enough, it's fine.
You're right. If you got the money,
you look at this studio now, right? And like they bought seven studios, I think, in the last year.
Seven studios, and this year they announced a new one.
Double Fine. Huge acquisition. Yep. Like Obsidian. Like they have A-tier talent in this roster now. And I think, like right now, it's not a super compelling package. But I think you look at the console that they're promising, what xCloud looks like, the awesome deal of Game Pass Ultimate where you get...
I signed up for that instantly.
100 new... And you did that deal where you get it for like fucking $50, right? Or whatever
basically...
$101 for four years.
It was like $1. I already had like 2 years left on my Xbox Live Gold, and I never really had Game Pass. So I signed up for the trial, the $1 trial. And what happens is if you already have like Xbox Live Gold, it converts your gold to Game Pass Ultimate. So now you have everything. Which is
holy shit.
So I have that.
Yeah,
for 2 years.
I'm doing that too. So up until 2020, we're paying $1 a year
a
month.
No, it's $1 until your membership. Pay the $1 for the first month, and then it goes until your membership ends.
So wait, quick question: does that mean you can extend your membership like by like 5 years of?
You can't. You can only do it for three.
So by 3 years,
they're probably
right
converting
now,
the membership to
and
this
just give
new
$1.
2022 is the farthest out you can go.
Yeah.
But my point is, right, with all of these things, I think Microsoft is proving that. They're really good at services,
they are.
I think like they've been building goodwill over the last generation. They came out with saying that their console is four times as powerful as the Xbox One X. Like that got me interested.
To be seen. I don't trust those
numbers. Okay, so Seth doesn't believe that Xbox can or Microsoft can deliver on this, and I ask him, and he can't tell me when Xbox has never delivered on their specs.
Yeah, I'm with you, Marcus.
They said it's going to do 8K 120 FPS and ray tracing.
Stop.
We don't even have PCs that can do ray tracing that consistently yet.
Yo, stop talking, dog. When have they not delivered on hardware?
Like a million times.
No, but like you can't cite your sources.
If I
so
gotta look them up, I will.
Look them up like, then, bro. Look we got time.
What do you
we
want me to look time up? Like,
I look up what you just claimed.
Yeah, like, I don't expect. So they said, okay, it's gonna do 8K on a Ryzen 2 chip. Ryzen 3 comes out in July.
So? Right, and it comes out in 2020. Why is that hard to believe?
Because I don't believe when they say, oh, it's going to do 8K. We barely even have 8K displays yet, and this is coming out next year. We don't know exactly what we have to push.
It's Microsoft, though, dude. Like, they're a PC company.
They
like,
are, yeah.
They have deals with like the hardware manufacturers and are getting shit in advance that isn't on the market yet. And you're saying it comes out in July, and you're saying you don't believe that they could have a box that's a consumer product that has an available chipset 6 months later?
They're doing
come on, man. Totally
Ryzen
possible.
2 in this chipset. They said it's a Ryzen 2-based chip. Ryzen 3 comes out in July.
Okay.
So the third generation of Ryzen comes out in July, and that probably can't do 8K yet. That's why I'm spectating.
But do you
I'm
know that?
Sure do you, about do you know what that? They're talking about. Do... They didn't even give us, like, okay, so the guy on the stage didn't give us hard numbers. We just saw a bunch of people in a video saying it'll do up to 100. It'll do up to 8K. That doesn't mean it's going to constantly do 8K.
It doesn't have to constantly do it. That's not the point.
Dude, if I can get... It doesn't have to be 120 frames per second constantly. If it's half constantly, that's still 60.
I still think they should focus on frame rate over resolution every single time. Now, what I wanted to see out of the next Xbox, to be totally honest with you, was one that functions more like a PC. Let us pick if we want to play a game at 1080, 120 frames. Let us do that. Why are they forcing
let's
us to pick,
it,
like,
well,
oh,
here,
it
here.
Runs in 8K, but it runs at, like, 25 frames a second.
Let's,
it's
well,
cinematic.
On.
You're getting so far in future talk,
yeah,
man. Like,
not,
you don't know if any of those
know.
Things are going to be in there.
So a lot of their talk is all speculation, and we understand that with any console, especially even with the PlayStation 5 or whatever they're going to call it. They did the same thing not too long ago as well. They threw out a bunch of numbers, but nothing really tangible to go off of outside of the demonstration
that
of
demo
Spider-Man.
Where they showed, yeah, like, hey, here's a city rendering and like at an eighth of the speed that it used to take. Like, woof.
No,
that's
wait, one
impressive.
Thing they are definitely going to deliver on that I definitely can't say they're lying about, and this has been a big thing for Sony and Microsoft, is load times.
Yeah.
They're saying these games are going to load super fast. SSDs have come really far.
SSD is the biggest.
This is going to be the first set of consoles that have SSDs, and that's going to crush load times.
Well, because you can put an SSD in a PS4,
right.
But
you
it can't take full advantage of it because of the bus. The
right.
bus bandwidth is actually the
right.
reason. So they're like integrating these things deep into the console. They're building them around having SSDs, so they're really going to be able to take advantage of the speed. Like, if you put in an SSD in your PS4, it might take like a fourth of the load time off.
Right.
But with the same technology in the newer consoles being built around it,
right.
they're going to load so much faster.
It's going to be
insane. Now, personally, I don't know if load times are what's going to sell a console for me.
I think it helps, man.
It definitely
it
helps.
It's
it helps.
Cool, but like...
And that's also not the only thing they promised. You might not want to believe any of it, but they said
but
120
they said
120 FPS,
which
dog,
is
8K.
If it gets there.
But
it will.
That's the thing. It's going to, because Microsoft has never not delivered on an Xbox.
Wait. So, real quick. I feel like we're talking in circles.
We
real
are.
Quick.
We are.
We definitely are. So, like,
because
let's move it forward.
We'll come back
we'll
to this topic.
We'll debate more.
Here,
I think
next
there
topic,
might be games comp.
Eden's Ring.
Elden Ring?
Elden's Ring.
You don't even know the name of the game.
Number one Dark Souls fan.
No. Well, outside of Elden Ring, yes.
Elden Ring?
They showed off a little bit of that. Cyberpunk 2077 still looks like an amazing world.
Keanu Reeves,
that game looks so good.
I cannot wait to see actual, like, on stage.
They showed off Outer Worlds again, too.
They showed off Outer Worlds.
Cannot wait for that.
That's going to be pretty cool. So, but Cyberpunk 2077, the Keanu Reeves, of course, that's also the trending topic that broke the internet, which was awesome.
No, that was really cool. I wasn't expecting Keanu.
Also, the guy that shouted at him, you're breathtaking.
Yeah.
CD Projekt Red partnered with him and was just like, yo, man, you're an awesome dude. Here's a free copy
they
of the
game. They just gave him the game.
Up.
That's because great. You cannot plan that type of positive marketing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, this is the least we can do. Like, here's a game, man.
Yeah.
Like, we have the Trinity.
And the thing is, like, also, not to be cynical about it, that's also a PR thing right there where, like, they gave them a copy and that became a news story and we're talking about it right
now.
True. So it's like, for $60, they got like four pieces of really expensive PR for nothing.
You're breathtaking.
But moving, so we got about 20 minutes left in the show and we got two more big ones. So Square Enix, yes, we know the majority of the press conference was Final Fantasy VII, so looking for something else to talk about outside of the Avengers being what the hell.
I feel like the big two things from the Square Enix is Avengers and Final Fantasy.
Yeah.
We'll talk about them, but real quick, anything else noteworthy? Like they announced, like, you know,
Final
Dragon
Fantasy
Quest.
VIII? That's
cool. That's
cool.
That's
the thing that's coming
that's
out.
That's like a finally thing.
Yeah, like a final
remaster.
Literally like a finally thing.
You know, Dragon Quest games, you know,
Dragon
Life
Quest coming to the Switch. I mean, that's not
that's
like
in the Nintendo stuff. Keep it focused.
They announced that before.
They announced that this
year. Yeah, well, that was already announced, though. They gave us the release date, right?
Which is cool.
I got two quick ones, both from Microsoft. Phantasy Star Online 2.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah,
just
that
to have
too.
A free to play MMO that's
cool.
Everybody's been waiting
for
years and years and years. Also, there was an indie game that I saw
Spirit
that looked really cool.
I'm sorry.
Not that. Well, that too.
That was good, too.
The Legend of Wright, I believe it was. That one that looks like a notebook drawing.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That had a cool vibe.
That was like my indie game of the show.
Yeah.
I will say that.
You know what's
mine
really
was
funny?
Fair, I won't lie. That one was good too.
That looks so cool. And you like build a boat and ferret spirits across the world. Like, that's awesome.
I'm into
the
it.
The funniest thing about Phantasy Star 2 coming to like America is people have been, they like people gave up. They were playing it on PC on the Japanese servers. And if you're an American playing on the Japanese server and they find out, they will ban you.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Because they like don't want to deal with Americans on the Japanese server, which I find really funny. But yeah, like people really have been waiting for that for like 10 years because that's not a new game. But apparently it's good enough that people are like
begging
going out
for
of their
it.
Way to play it.
Yeah.
So that's cool.
AJ, take it away with the Final Fantasy VII Remake.
Okay, so first of all, this game looks beautiful.
It
this
does.
This game looks stunning. And at first I was like, oh man, it's flashy, it's action-based. But you know what else was flashy and action-based? But ultimately, from a gameplay perspective, a little bit shallow, Final Fantasy XV and Kingdom Hearts 3. So, I came into this
did
like
just
very...
Kingdom Hearts 3? Let's admit it.
I admit that the gameplay in Kingdom Hearts 3 is not as good as the gameplay in Kingdom Hearts 2.
Hell
from
yeah.
From a story perspective, it gave a satisfying conclusion to the Xehanort saga, and I had fun with, like, you know, beautiful, like, the Disney worlds were a lot of fun, things like that. But the gameplay was not as deep as I would have liked. I admit it. And going to Final Fantasy 7, I was expecting the same thing. Then they broke down the gameplay mechanics. And what was it about?
Nice.
What was like strategy mode or what was it called?
I'm looking up what it was. Tactical mode.
Tactical mode. Yes. The way, like, it's action-based, really fast-paced, and then tactical mode. And the way you switch between all the characters in combat, and you kind of position your different characters almost like a RTS.
Dude, it reminded me of Dragon Age Origins.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like, it was that exact same vibe of, like, you can go the action route, but if you want to pause it and look at the whole map and like line up everybody's stuff and then let it like, oh my God.
You
that's
can do
also
that
what
in,
Fallout does
you can
that.
Do that in Dragon Quest XI too. They let you, it's like an art, like you run around, you can go behind the enemy and do a thing from over there and then your other teammates are all in a line still standing there. You can switch between them and move.
And that,
so like that's stuff, that's a thing that they tried out in 11 and they probably have perfected in Final Fantasy VII.
So it looks good. Like, I think it looks really good.
Like here's the thing with Final Fantasy VII. The graphics, beautiful. The gameplay thus far, and also from the people who played it, they find it very fun. Like, the voice acting, stellar. It's just like, it's everything I want. But, there is one huge potential issue.
Two.
One. At least the one that I think of.
What's the one that you're thinking of?
I'm not mad that this game is going to be broken up into different parts, because Final Fantasy VII
I'm
is
mad
a
about that.
Huge
that
game. It's a huge game. I get it, especially if they're expanding it as much as they say they are, and based on what people are saying.
Yeah.
If they expand it over, like, two or three games, I get that. But this entire game is only taking place in Midgard.
Yes, it is. That's what they said. They never really talked about episodic. They never said this is chapter one.
They did. They said it's two discs.
It's two discs.
No,
worth of content.
But this is not the entire Final Fantasy VII
story. It's just Midgard.
It's not.
Right. And a press release that said it's just Midgard.
Yeah.
For those who haven't played Final Fantasy VII, Midgard is the first 5 to 10% of Final Fantasy VII.
Right.
Yeah.
So that, it's a little disappointing. I mean, we'll see what they do. Maybe they'll expand on the story of the game. Maybe they'll redo it.
No,
they
said that. They're going to be exploring the worlds more deeply, like the sections of the world
Midgard's
more deeply.
Midgard's a big city. And in Final Fantasy VII, for those of you who have or haven't played it, Midgard is big, but it's not like it's portrayed to be much bigger than it is when you play it because of the way they had to do the game. It's all pre-rendered backgrounds and this and that. So maybe they'll make Midgard really huge. Like, look at it in Advent Children the movie. It's a big city. So maybe they'll have enough room to really do the whole
That's
game.
That's
kind of
what it seems
Midgard.
Like.
I guess my I hope biggest so. Fear is like I'm 100% down with them expanding the story, adding different things, fleshing different characters out and things like that. But you're fleshing out the first 5 to 10% of the game into a 2-disc long epic. What I'm worried about is that after a period of time, how much of that is going to feel like filler knowing the full Final Fantasy story.
Right.
If they can make this entire like 60 plus hour game over two discs engaging from beginning to end, if it only takes up the first 10% of Final Fantasy VII, they nailed it. But I have no way of knowing that, and that's my fear. And there's no way I'm going to know that before the game comes out.
Yeah.
There's uh-oh, also the Pete, issue. Remember how last time we had concerns? Now Ken has some concerns.
I know,
concerns.
Now we're like the ones defending
like,
it.
Okay with it.
I'm like, I think it looks good now.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm all right. I'm totally okay with
this. I hear your concerns. My concerns are similar to that, and it's that, okay, if this is the first 10%, right, does that mean that there's going to be, like, how many more parts are there?
They said they don't know.
Right.
They said they have no idea.
They say they don't know, and they have no idea, and how long is it going to be between each entry? So, like, are we going to be playing Final Fantasy VII for the next, like, 20 years? Because I'm not down.
Do I have to buy the Tifa DLC? Like, like, my problem is, with the game being episodic, I want to see Final Fantasy. I feel like it's almost like a sin to break a Final Fantasy game and make it episodic. And that's actually a big problem.
They did that
I had
with Final Fantasy
15.
13, in a sense, but well, continue.
I had a problem with 15 because 15, you play it, and it really is a short game when you get down to it. I think I beat it in, like, 15 hours. And then later, they started doing these DLCs, and as you play through 15, there's points where party characters will step out for a little bit, and then they'll come back. Well, that turns out to be where the DLC was. You would have known that on launch, but that turns out to be where the DLC was. So it feels like they really did cut content out of that game. Now, going back and playing it, I hear it's great with all the DLC, but what if Final Fantasy VII's the same? What if they start tacking on parts of the game, and it's going to feel like a content.
I think
that
it's
going to
be different for one reason only. I think it's going to be like Final Fantasy VII is going to have like a distinct ending, and the next part is going to be the next chunk.
Yeah.
And it's going to be like random chunks are missing from the middle.
But that I don't want to feel like Final Fantasy XV stops at the end of Midgard. Like, you get a conclusion, and then, oh, well, in 3 years, we'll have the next chapter
the
out.
The end,
like,
of Midgard was a very big moment, and I can see how they can end it there.
Sure.
But, like, I just don't see how they can expand it without adding, like, a ton of shit. Well, they have to add a ton of stuff to 7.
The good news is they had CyberConnect 2 on the project, and I'm really glad they got rid of CyberConnect 2. They've made some good games, but mostly
bad.
Just okay, like, fan games. So, like, they made the Naruto games, they made the JoJo games.
Which
they
are
make
the
a lot
only
of
games I care
games.
About from CyberConnect 2.
But here's the thing.
Let's be real.
Here's
Ultimate
the thing.
Ninja's fucking cool.
You
anyway.
Care, but is it a good game?
No, absolutely
exactly.
not.
Exactly. So I like JoJo, but the JoJo game is not a good game. Exactly. So what? I don't know why they picked them in the first place. This could have come out a lot sooner if they did it internal. They moved it to internal. So
but
I'm hoping they really flesh it out. I'm hoping they cancel the episodic thing and just make it like...
That's not going to happen, man. The game comes out next year.
March 3rd.
It's a done deal at this point. At this point, it's kind of like a wait-and-see situation.
Wait, so hold on. What if they release this, right, and this is the first chapter, but then after that, they go, we're going to take a five-year break, and then they come back, and the rest of it's there.
That's never going to happen.
No, that's not going to happen.
I think it took them too long to do that. Like, they have been hyping this remake. Or at least, I don't know if they've been hyping.
Yeah, they
have. Fans
haven't.
Have
yeah,
been
we
hyping.
Have.
We want a Final Fantasy VII remake for so long. Yeah. And they've re-released Final Fantasy VII. Like, on it. You can play it on anything.
Also, counterpoint. If they flesh out the first 10% of the game this much, in order to cram the last 90% into, like, one game, it would just have to be a lot more thin compared to the first
one.
Yeah,
they wouldn't do that.
They would have to have consistent quality throughout.
I think this is going to be, like, a 4 or 5 game series.
Yeah, I can see it definitely going to 4 or 5 games. Like, maybe even 6.
Oh,
like,
no.
But at $60 a game, though... That's also the thing.
Like, I don't know if Final Fantasy VII is worth that much.
Do you think Final Fantasy? Do you think this first one's going to be $60?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. I think it's going to be $60,
well,
but I don't.
60 and get all 5 episodes.
Not only is the base model $60, there's a limited edition version.
There's a collector's edition.
That's $329.
Because you get a statue.
Well, they know
Cloud
how much hype there is behind this game in particular.
Wait,
they know people will buy that.
Wait, you get Cloud's motorcycle like a figure? Like a,
yeah, it's a statue.
I hear it's a high quality figure, but
it's made by PlayArts Kai.
Yeah. Oh, okay. That's cool.
So it's a high quality figure, but like they know people are going
to
buy it.
Yeah, I definitely
but
think...
real quick, we're running a little bit short on time, so we have to go to Nintendo.
We
but
have to talk
before
about the
that,
winners.
Before that,
we
Avengers.
Will. We will.
Avengers.
We got to kind of... Like,
okay,
speed
so
round, speed round.
Speed round. Avengers, the character models look a little weird, but it's an alpha. Suck my dick. It's going
to
be cool.
Pass to me. I think I definitely agree with Marcus and everybody who's complaining it. I would like you to go back and turn your attention to the E3 reaction to the first full playable Spider-Man demo that we saw. And right. Everybody complained about how the facial animations were weird and it was a little janky. And then it came out and it was beautiful. And then we complained about puddles. It's going to be fine.
Okay, my turn.
Wait to see more of the game.
Shoot.
So, Avengers isn't... I know a lot of you guys out there really like to look at the movies and be like, that's Avengers. But let's not forget that there's a comic book that it's based on.
Yeah.
So the movies, for all of you out there complaining that the game doesn't look like the characters in the movie characters don't look like the ones in the comics all the time. Get over it. The game's probably going to be great. So give it a shot. Don't hate on it for that one thing.
Okay, next point. The game, it looks beautiful. The graphics look great. I'm very intrigued by the point that it's very story-based.
Mm-hmm. Killer voice cast.
Killer voice cast.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's
an
original story.
Also, surprised Hawkeye's not there. What happened to Hawkeye?
We only need five people. It's fine.
No. 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 Absolutely fucking not.
If you had to pick a character, if you were like, I can play as Iron Man or I can pick Hawkeye, who's going to pick Hawkeye?
Hawkeye!
No, yeah, Iron Hawkeye's Man. He shoots lasers from his hands.
So I feel like the only reason why Hawkeye is in there is so they could have Black Widow in there so they could have a woman.
Well, Black Widow's also just cooler.
Yeah, she is. Let's be real.
Yeah, she's a spy who can actually do shit. Dude, Hawkeye has a bow.
Hawkeye has a Ronin.
Wait. Hawkeye is a fucking family man. He has so many trick arrows.
And that makes him a good video game character.
No.
Look, I love him as a character, but in an action game?
I would rather play
Iron Man.
Wait. In an action game, he is objectively better than Black Widow, simply because now it's not just a bow and arrow. It's a bow and arrow that has so many different trick shots.
And on top of that, he can do martial arts just like
And Iron Man can shoot lasers.
Which kind of sucks because ever since the MCU, they never really explored that. They've always explored him as just a bow and arrow. And then Avengers, nothing more. In Marvel vs. Capcom did more right on Hawkeye than the MCU.
I'll give you that.
Which,
listen, if you want to do right on Hawkeye, go read Matt Fraction's run on Hawkeye. That's the good shit.
Ooh. But as far as like overall appearance with the Avengers, then we're good to you. Yeah. And then we're ended up. You know, looks great. I have some issues with some character designs. That's a personal opinion.
Sure. Same,
but like, I'm not going to like say the game's going to be bad because of that. The main thing is I don't have enough to get me hyped on the game because they showed like maybe 20 seconds of gameplay throughout the entire thing. And even that gameplay, I have no idea how it actually plays. Yeah. Once I get a few more details, then maybe I can start being like, oh, I think it's going to be great because X, Y, or Z are A, B, and C. But I think it's too early to cast judgment, except for some of the character designs. I don't like the way Captain America looks. I don't like the way Thor looks.
I don't like the way Black Widow looks. To me, Black Widow, like, I know we actually did a comparison chart on it on the Party Nerds Instagram.
She does,
like, just the facial structure and everything else, but that's just me. Also, I hate that we are in, another trend. We're in a world where if you announce that you're not loot box or pay to win, everybody's like losing their damn minds.
Yeah, I was really surprised. They're like, no loot boxes.
Whatever.
Why would there be
loot
boxes?
And also free DLC.
Well, because it's going to have an online multiplayer.
Okay, fair.
Tony Stark with long hair threw me off big time and watching that, like that cutscene he had with Banner.
I dig it.
I dig it so hard. I dig it.
I will say, like them patting themselves on the back for not having paid DLC or whatever aside, they did announce they're going to be releasing new heroes in DLC free. And they teased the Ant-Man thing and it's all going to be free, so that's pretty cool too.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess if Hawkeye's free DLC, they get a pass.
He's going to come.
Yeah.
As long as the game doesn't come out feeling like it's missing content.
Right.
Like, I'm glad they're doing it for free.
We got to talk about that when it happens.
Yeah, that's true.
The winners of E3.
I think it's going to be great.
Last one. The winners of E3 by a country mile, Nintendo.
Nintendo Switch! Yeah!
Buy one, buy 30.
Buy it.
So we went into E3 knowing that, hey, Smash is coming out. We're going to have an announcement. We did not expect two characters, let alone an Xbox property.
Except Ken and I did. What up, brother?
They did call that.
You guys were true believers. I will give you that. You guys were absolute true believers.
I'm more excited for the other one.
I am too.
I digress. There's no shame in being excited for Dragon Quest.
I like Dragon Quest more than I like Banjo-Kazooie. I'm more excited for the Dragon Quest.
I think it's really funny how like the two announcements are literally like, okay, Gen Xers, here's your Dragon Quest character. Oh, Millennials, here's your Banjo-Kazooie.
Yeah.
Boom.
Fucking amazing. Also, before we get to like the main one, especially the main announcement at the end of the press conference, there were a lot of things that they did.
Everything
Luigi's
was
Mansion
good.
Looks awesome.
Yeah, Luigi's
Link's
Mansion
Awakening
cool.
looks pretty cool with the Dungeon Maker.
Link's Awakening is one of my favorite Zelda games, and it is super unappreciated.
I can't wait to play it, honestly.
Such a good game.
Did you see the Link's Awakening amiibo?
Yes, I did.
It's perfect.
Here's the real hotness.
I'm going to buy it.
Did you guys see the Link's Awakening Deluxe Edition? That's European exclusive, though.
What's in the European?
The European one's better because it has the art book and it also has a steel like jewel case, and it's a fucking like old school chunky Game Boy style steel case with the like screen on it from it's the opening screen from
Link's Awakening.
Can I just buy it?
You can import it, but I'm having one of my boys from Loot Pot send it to me, so I don't have to pay the import tax.
Yo, PSA. you know, the Switch is region unlocked, you can import it and just have that be
and
your
just
main
play
version.
It. Yeah.
Oh, it'll work, yeah.
And if you have a boy, Pete, hook a brother up. Yep. Yeah. That's all I'm saying.
Crazy Pete's discount imports. Hit me up.
Other announcements that happened. Witcher 3. The Witcher 3 to complete coming on Switch. Resident
That's
Evil
cool.
5
that
and 6.
That surprised me. The Witcher.
Man, they've it's been such teasing a big that game. For like 3 weeks, though.
But now third-party devs have no excuse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's all
Well, okay, so they do have an excuse because you could scale down anything to be on the Switch, but it could look like shit. So
yeah,
Mortal Kombat 11
proved
that.
I'm just surprised
that.
They like worked The Witcher.
But like,
it's such a big game, man.
But like Doom and The Witcher both look great on Switch, so I kind of feel like if you work hard enough, you can make it look right.
Yeah, like you just have to like try.
Like I guess it really depends on how flexible your engine is and how well it works on Switch.
It depends,
how flexible
your team Bethesda's is. Game, so like Doom and Wolfenstein, like last generation Doom and Wolfenstein, they really don't look very good in handheld mode, but when you put them on the dock, they actually scale it pretty well. It's
yeah,
in handheld
it's
mode,
not
they're
bad.
A little blurry.
To keep it,
like,
but they play fine.
To keep
yeah,
it simple,
right.
It's cost versus
play them,
value.
But it's probably better on a PS4.
That's true.
Oh, for sure. Mm-hmm.
Last two announcements, just skipping over some of the other third-party stuff they announced. We finally saw some gameplay of Animal Crossing called New Horizons.
Yes.
Yep. It's we got another trailer for Fire Emblem, too.
Fire Emblem. There was a trailer. Astral Chain had a trailer.
I love Platinum
No More Heroes
so much.
Astral Chain actually looks really cool, and it looks like
it's
like low-key
the best game they showed off, to be honest.
I am so uninterested in Astral Chain. I think it looks so bland.
Do you not like Platinum games?
No, I don't.
Oh, well, then there's your problem, man. Platinum games are awesome.
It looks bland. It looks generic. Not a fan.
Oh, okay. So,
the last
I can
thing,
see how it looks
look at,
generic.
So the
I
last
can,
thing before the last thing before we sign off, official announcement: a sequel to Breath of the Wild. It is happening.
So important. That's so important.
Yeah.
I can't wait to have adventures with. We can have an adventure with Zelda.
With what? Zelda.
With
wait.
Zelda.
What? Co-op adventure.
Co-op adventure.
No, we don't know anything about it. So we
Doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. I'm speculating.
We do know that Monolith Soft is working on it.
Yeah.
I heard that.
Not the main dev, maybe, but they're working on it.
Yeah.
Just like last time.
Dude,
it's sort of like Super Mario Galaxy
2.
Could
you imagine being able to, like, hey, just pick up this controller. You can play as Zelda now. She can also do stuff.
I hope so.
Like, dude, that would
That's
be
what
so
I'm really
cool.
hoping.
I'm really hoping for that.
Okay, so.
But even if it's not that, a buddy cop story, basically, or a guard story of Zelda and Link together, I'm down.
And my thing is, even if it's not that, at least Animal Crossing comes out next year.
Yeehaw.
So yeah. I'm really critical of Breath of the Wild. I don't like open world Zelda. But the thing that really doesn't do it for me, particularly in Breath of the Wild, is the dungeons. So if they fix the dungeons and make them like Zelda dungeons, like I want temples. I loved how big, like I'll never forget playing the forest temple for the first time.
We
in
have
time.
Five,
I love it.
Six Zelda games in a row that follow that exact same formula.
And the formula works so well, other games straight up rip it off and still sell because of it.
Yeah.
Look at Darksiders.
But like do something new. That's why Breath of the Wild was amazing.
I think
it got
that,
back to the roots of what made Zelda unique in the first place.
I think that they need to
the
just do
the
dungeons
game.
Better because they were so small.
Wait.
They're not dungeons, though. They're shrines.
Help me because I'm blanking on his name, the creator of Zelda.
Eiji Aonuma?
No. Miyamoto's the creator of Zelda, which is what. But you mean Aonuma, who's the producer?
No. I'm
Miyamoto.
Miyamoto. Because he said the reason why he wanted to make this game was because it reminded him of going out in the woods and exploring.
Mm-hmm.
So an open world Zelda for me was a no brainer.
Yep.
And then they did it with Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask and then Breath of the Wild. Ooh. Like, you know what I mean? They got it fucking right this time.
Well,
I mean,
what
they're going to make a
Breath of the Wild,
to that?
But with
Hell
like
yeah.
Ocarina of Time dungeon style. Like big. Temples that you have to go
I mean,
through. Like, I
and
like
waiting
that.
For enemies to hit you so you can hit them.
No, but
no.
Things that I like about those Zeldas.
Listen,
that
they're
are
all
in
good.
Wild.
We don't need to argue about which one is better. They're all valid, guys. Don't bring up the CDI, Ken. I see you. I fucking see you. He's just like, oh, I got you, boy. No.
The CDI literally, they don't even acknowledge its existence.
It was
really dope.
So
they're like, no, it doesn't happen.
So, judging by our thoughts here, to wrap it up, because we have about 3 or so minutes left.
Yeah.
It's interesting how E3 just kind of went from a dud fest to like Nintendo saving it.
Nintendo straight up won.
They literally were just like, literally, you made this point on your stream with Loot Pots. Thank you. If you didn't like a game on there, you had no, like, you.
Yeah,
I borrowed
a joke from Dunkey's Super Mario Odyssey video where I said, if you didn't feel anything during this direct, wipe yourself off because you're fucking dead. Like, there was come on.
For everyone. If so, you didn't like anything, what
no,
the fuck?
We even didn't even talk about No More Heroes. Like, yeah, if you didn't play too. The first No More Heroes on the Wii, that game was so fun.
They're yes.
And
now
we got
and a Panzer Dragoon reboot. Like,
Nintendo where did that really come from? Did wasn't have something for everybody.
Also, Spyro on Switch.
Yep.
Spyro on Switch. Literally,
the only thing that they showed that wasn't good was just Mario and Sonic at the Olympics, where it's just like, please stop making
those. No, but those games are actually bad games. Like, they're not like,
there are people that buy that game.
people buy them, but.
No, literally, it's one of those things for kids where like, hey, listen, it's a fun mini game collection.
Nintendo makes games for children, too.
Yes.
So even if we are grown-up children who still play their games.
You say it's a bad game, but I butt your ass. We would have so much fun making it a drinking game on a stream.
I'll give you that.
Before we get into the wrap up, seeing Tails Taekwondo kick the shit out of Peach was awesome in the Taekwondo movie.
All right, fair enough.
I was down for that shit.
Fair enough.
All right.
And Yoshi on a skateboard.
All right.
All right.
Oh, yeah,
there you go.
Skateboarding's the
So yeah, E3 was a crazy time this year. There was so much stuff going on. And of course, the next couple of days are all the game demos. People on the show floor putting in their thoughts about like trying out some of these games. The Final Fantasy lines filled up in 15 minutes, just like the Kingdom Hearts line we had at Comic-Con. So who knows what's going to be happening out there. Couple of things. I'm going to throw out some administrative stuff. So if you want to see more from us at the Gamer Central crew, we now have our own Instagram.
Dude, yo.
Finally, follow us at Gamer Central Nerds with a Z. We will have some content, let you know what we're doing coming up soon. Also some memes by AJ. He's already got a couple going up right now.
We also
will have some YouTube going up soon. Same thing, Party Nerds Gamer Central. So you'll see some Let's Plays coming from us soon. A lot of other things that are going to be happening. And finally, one of the things that we're going to work on the YouTube channel, I'm going to pitch this to all of us here, a quick couple of minutes, maybe like 2-3 minutes from each of us about our game of show. Because I know we did that last year. We had a podcast talking about the game of show. So that's what we're going to do on our YouTube page. We're going to have everybody pitching their game of show for E3. So there's going to be a lot of stuff going on. But otherwise, that's it for this podcast. E3 2019 is in the books for now. So much more to come down pipeline for AJ, for Seth, for Pete, for Marcus, Ooh. Your boy Ed. Party Nerds are out.
We out.
Peace.